Remember this day. Mark it down. This is the day, I think you'll look back in history, when historians will say this was the day that European and NATO leaders sabotaged Trump's effort to end the Russia-Ukraine war. In my view, a shot across the bow both by NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte and the President of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, unequivocally said there will be no peace between Russia and Ukraine. We will sabotage any efforts to do anything besides that. If you think I'm exaggerating, let's take a look at what happened. You see this headline right here from Politico. This came out. This was just at 6 p.m. Central European time in the afternoon today. So just hours ago, Mark Rutte, Secretary General, declares that Russia has no vote and no veto on joining NATO. Now, the fact that he's even bringing this up is like waving red meat in front of a lion and asking him not to take it, or waving a red cape in front of a bull and saying, please don't charge. Wink, wink. You know what's going to happen. You know the reaction it's going to have. And Mark Rutte is no stupid idiot. He's no dummy. He knows exactly what he's doing. And he is saying that this issue that led to the war in the first place, if you could boil it all down to a single issue, there was a lot of things that had involved with Russia's attack in February of 2022. But if you could only boil it down to one, the primary driver was NATO joining, or Ukraine joining NATO. The NATO alliance expanding into Ukraine. That's what Russia had been warning about explicitly since 2007, again in 2008, and all the way through, and all the way into 2021, starting back in November. Starting as early as March of that year. And then especially in December, came to a head then. The last chance to avoid peace came at that time. We're going to get into that in a second here too. But that history just says that NATO is fully aware by their own admission that they understand that the threat of NATO going into Ukraine spawned this war in the first place. 100% certainty by this NATO Secretary General himself has said this. So when Mark Rutte today goes out and declares openly, even brings the subject up, means that he knows this is a poison pill. Russia has been saying ad nauseum, really all the way through, but let's just start with June of 2024 and all the way through and certainly into all this period, ever since Trump has been inaugurated. And every time there's a phone call with Witkoff, there's a phone call with Trump and Putin, a visit between them, or in Sergey Lavrov, any of these folks, anytime we've had issues where there's maybe going to be some kind of a breakthrough with peace, they always say root causes. Any kind of a negotiated settlement, any kind of an end of the war has to address the root causes of the war in the first place, and that centers on NATO. It has always centered on NATO. It still centers on NATO. It will always center on NATO. NATO knows that. Mark Rutte is well aware of that. So when you have now this latest issue where Trump, a few days back, it was leaked that he was trying to get this new 28-point peace plan, and that he's trying to find this, you know, any kind of common ground he can between the two sides. They had been talking with Russia. They eventually also were talking with Europe and Ukraine, et cetera. They've been doing a lot of shuttle diplomacy between all those ever since it became common knowledge. Now that there's a plan where Russia, Zelensky is potentially going to come to Washington, D.C. to talk to Trump. Trump is going to send Witkoff back to Moscow to talk to Putin, et cetera. Trump is doing everything he can to try and bring this into a peaceful conclusion. Europe wants to do everything it can to throw cold water on it. If you saw our show earlier today, or one I did yesterday, where I showed how you had Keir Starmer and Emmanuel Macron just jumping all over themselves to point out things that they know are kind of poison pills, things that they don't think are going to be acceptable to the Russian side. Yeah, Keir Starmer talking about a just and lasting peace, his favorite phrase that he says forever, which is code word for everything working out in Ukraine's favor, which he then enumerated. You had Emmanuel Macron talking about how, okay, you know what, we have to have security guarantees for Ukraine here, i.e. there will be no demilitarization. In fact, there's going to be a remilitarization and an even greater capability, and Europe will continue to provide literal security guarantees for Ukraine against Russia. He knows that that will never be acceptable. Well, apparently that wasn't enough. And so today you had Mark Rutte and Ursula von der Leyen make strong points to say, yeah, that's not going to happen. They're going to say stuff that they know will be antithetical to Russia and that they won't agree to. And the, one of the key ones there from Rutte is that, you know, this whole claim about there being a NATO, no NATO veto, sorry, for the Russian side. What that means is it's still on the table. So if you know that Russia won't stop fighting unless the core causes of the war are addressed, and you know the core cause was NATO and Ukraine, then you know that by bringing that up and saying Russia does not have a veto, and so whatever agreement that we reach, that we're willing to reach, will not include a declaration of no NATO. So that's what he said right off the top. But he went a little bit further with that. He also said in there that, oh, by the way, if Moscow agrees to any kind of a deal, that won't keep us safe anyway, because he said Russia will continue to be a long-term threat for a long time. So even, he says, if you get a deal, it won't give us peace. So what he's signaling, not just to Europe, but to Russia, is that we will always consider you an enemy, and we will continue to treat you as such. So if anybody's thinking this is going to lead to peace and any kind of a European-wide security architecture that everyone can live in peace and security, forget it. The Europeans are not on board with that at all. They are going to continue to treat Russia like an enemy. They are going to continue to build up their military, not just to provide their security, but to provide an offensive strike capacity. They keep talking about that over and over. I mean, the Germans have already forward deployed troops into the Baltics. Apparently that can increase even further, as the German chancellor says that we want to have the preeminent military power on the continent. So they're going to build up their forces, maybe even higher than the 5%. It's unknown, at least aspirational. It's a separate question whether they can actually get that done, but that's what the leaders of these European nations are saying. Ursula von der Leyen today also joined with that, and she says, you know, this is a direct undercut to Trump himself. Because as this discussion about Trump having these negotiations with Russia and maybe sending Witkoff and his son and son-in-law Jared Kushner to Moscow to talk with Russia, she says again, nothing about Europe without Europe and nothing about NATO without NATO. Okay, well, just not to quibble, but America is NATO. We are the holding power that glues all of it together. Without the United States, none of this stuff happens in NATO. At least it didn't. Now, Trump likes to talk all the time about being this strong character and that, you know, somebody who dominates things and is, you know, telling the Europeans what to do. But honestly, if we're just looking at actions and reactions and responses, it looks pretty much like it's the Europeans that are calling the shots. Because every time Trump has tried to have a negotiated settlement to end this, and I'm talking about from the very beginning of his term here, the Europeans shoot it down. Ukraine shoots it down. And what has been the reaction from Trump? Has there been a cost on Europe at all? None that I can see. And the fact that they continue to feel confident, cocky, on this day to make these comments while Trump is in the process of trying to have a negotiated settlement, while he's changed already from these negotiations, shrunk down from 28 points down to 19 points that are more favorable to the Ukraine side. Now, there's a separate issue of whether that would be acceptable to Russia. It wouldn't. But this just shows you that Trump is still trying to placate Europe. And listen, Europe knows that, you got to be honest, they're just playing Trump. And they know how to do it. Mark Rutte, in this negotiations or in this interview here that was on Politico, made a point of saying, oh, you know, I like Trump. He's a good guy. He's a smart guy. And they always throw all these accolades because they've learned, especially from Zelensky's experience in the Oval Office at the late February, where they had that big exchange with the United States between Vice President Vance and Trump and Zelensky, and where especially the vice president said, you know, you haven't said thank you a single time and all this kind of stuff. Well, now then they learned that. So they said, okay, flattery get somewhere with Trump. So they flatter him up one side and down the other. Mark Rutte is constantly talking a bunch of smack about Trump in a positive way. Remember the whole, oh yeah, you're like daddy. Daddy comes to the table and everybody gives and does what they want. So they flatter him to his face and then behind they mock him. And apparently Trump is unaware he's just being mocked and played by these kinds of comments that directly undercut what he's trying to do. And of course, this has precedent. This is not new. This is just a recitation and a repeat of what NATO has been doing from the outset of this and why they have sabotaged every opportunity that we have previously had for peace. So in December, let's go back to just December. In December 2021, Russia had put on the table a proposed peace treaty, an actual peace treaty that they actually wrote out. And the primary issue that they said was no NATO in Ukraine, and that there were rights for the Ukrainian, the Russian ethnic people who lived inside of Ukraine, and a change on their internal dynamics about the freedom of speech, freedom of their language, several things like that. But it did not include Russian occupation of their country. Crimea was never on the table. But all of the Donbass could have stayed, all of the Donbass, all of it. So the contiguous, the basically the continental part of Ukraine could have stayed in Kiev's control if that had been agreed to. But what we know now, thanks to Jens Stoltenberg, Mark Rutte's predecessor, here's what happened. Here's what he said in December 2021. So just about 2 months away, almost exactly 2 months away before the war started, he comes out and pounds on the table that despite what Russia is offering here, he said, Russia has no right to demand Ukraine be excluded from NATO, says Alliance Chief. Nobody has a veto, he said several times. I don't know if you remember that. Literally the same phrase that Mark Rutte just used. That's why I'm telling you, this is a known issue. He knows what the response is going to be. So Jens Stoltenberg said in December 2021 that Russia has no right to say anything about NATO. So it's on the table. You don't have a veto, right? That's what we know. Now we know subsequent to that what happened behind the scenes, as Jens Stoltenberg himself admitted in October of 2023.
President Putin declared in the autumn of 2021, and he actually sent a draft treaty that he wanted NATO to sign to promise no more NATO enlargement. That was what he sent us. And that was a precondition for not invade Ukraine. Of course, we didn't sign that.
Yeah, of course we didn't sign that. I mean, can you just listen to what he literally just said from his own lips? Putin told us that if NATO is just taken off the table, there would not have been an invasion. So all this nonsense that you hear and all these lies that you hear from the Western side all the way through, especially from the Biden administration, Keir Starmer and all of his predecessors, Boris Johnson, etc. All of these folks kept saying over and over that Putin is the new Hitler. He just wants to storm across Europe and take over everything. My God, we have to stop him here or he's coming for us next. That was exposed by NATO as being a lie. A lie. Because Russia told them privately, if you take NATO off the table, then the threat of invasion is gone. Now, remember, there was somewhere around 100,000, 200,000 Russian troops surrounding Ukraine at the time. At the time this was happening here, there was a buildup on their borders to Russia showing that they're very serious about this. But they told him, here's a draft treaty. Sign this treaty. There won't be a war. So you don't have to give up sovereignty of Ukraine. You don't have to become a vassal state of Russia. None of that stuff. You don't have to get rid of your military. You don't have to get denazification. None of those things were on the table then. Russia wasn't demanding any of those. They just wanted some rights for the ethnic Russians living inside of Ukraine. That was the primary cause that they had, and no NATO. Those were the things. Had they agreed to that, there would not have been a war. Never been a war. Somewhere around a million Ukrainian men would be alive today. Somewhere around 10 million Ukrainian people would still be living inside of Ukraine instead of scattered abroad and throughout Europe, being a headache and an economic burden on all these other countries, which is now wearing real thin on a lot of those. All these cities, Mariupol, Lysychansk, Severodonetsk, Bakhmut, Krinky, ad infinitum, Pokrovsk, Mirnograd, Kupiansk, all these places would still be 100% whole today. No issues at all. If everybody would be living in peace and security, they'd just be going on with their lives. All because NATO said no to peace in December 2021. NATO then said no to peace in April of 2022. They said no to peace in the summer of 2024 after the disastrous offensive utterly failed and just caused Ukraine to suffer incalculable and irrecoverable losses. They refused then too. Everywhere that they've had a chance for peace, they have sabotaged it. All during the time when Trump was trying to get peace from the time he got inaugurated, that famous time in February of 2025, earlier this year, they sabotaged that. First Zelensky, and then Europe joined in behind him. In Alaska, the second time we had a really big opportunity for peace, again, sabotaged. Nobody from the West or Ukraine was willing to do any of the things that were necessary to reach peace. Russia continued to stay at the table. They said if these conditions are met, and now then those conditions are a lot worse than they were in December 2021, worse than they were in April of 2022 or June 2024. Now then they're worse. And if you reject these, there's not going to be any terms eventually. Russia's eventually just going to take it all. But every time you refuse peace, you deepen the wounds for Ukraine, deepen the cost for failure for Ukraine. But it doesn't seem to matter for us. We just continue to go on here. And, you know, and we have in the situation here, we're in this environment now where Trump is again trying to get peace. And I do give him credit for that. And I'm grateful that he's talking on this. But Trump is going to have to grow a backbone. He's going to have to do something he has been unwilling to do at any point in this that he could have done at every point since he's been inaugurated. And that's just tell Ukraine and Russia, Ukraine and Europe, pound freaking sand. If you're going to continue down a disastrous, destructive path that could cause this war to expand and spill beyond the borders, and definitely, even if it stays contained in the borders, destroy utterly the literal cities, countryside, and people of Ukraine, you're going to do that on your own. President Trump should just say, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm not going to underwrite known failure. It would be illogical, irrational, and immoral for me to say, we'll keep spending money. We'll keep giving you intelligence support. We'll keep providing ammunition that you can buy. Who cares about that? That doesn't even matter. But we'll keep giving you so that you can continue to destroy yourself. That's irrational. It's illogical. And it's immoral. It's immoral for all these people who are doing that. Because the bill payers have no choice in this, the Ukrainian people. They'll just continue to die. And our credibility will continue to be shred. At least this time, Trump could say with a clean conscience, okay, listen, this is where we're at. This is what I'm going to do and no further. And look, he gave indication yesterday. He's aware of some of these things. On board Air Force One last night, he was asked about what the situation is with this negotiation right now. And he admitted, and he revealed rather, that he understood one really important fact.
Well, I think, look, this war could go on for years, and Russia's got a lot more people, got a lot more soldiers. So I think if Ukraine can make a deal, it's a good thing. I think it's great for both. Frankly, I think it's great for both. But Ukraine's got a much smaller group of people. They've lost a lot of people. Russia's lost a lot of people. But Russia has a much bigger pool of people.
So you see, he understands what we've been telling you since this channel existed. War is about men, not machines, not money. And Trump acknowledged that out loud on Air Force One yesterday. Ukraine doesn't have the men. Russia does. All the other things that go along with that, the money and the machines, are still all in Russia's favor. But when you have the machines, the money, and the manpower in Russia's favor, you can't win. It doesn't matter how you consider your cause righteous. It doesn't matter how brave people are. It doesn't matter how tough they fight, how brilliant they just, you know, have tactics. None of that matters in a war of attrition. It has never mattered. And it definitely doesn't matter here. And we see it playing out before our eyes, and Trump recognizes it. So the question now, will Trump finally be an America First president? If he's going to be America First and take care of our interest, then he must do some version of what I said there. He's got to tell Europe, y'all have lost your minds. You are going down a path that will fail, is failing, has failed. Every time there has been a chance for peace, you have sabotaged it. And now you're trying to sabotage it again. He should tell them, I see what you're doing. I'm not stupid. I'm aware of it. And I'm not going down this path anymore. I don't care how much compliments you give me. I'm not stupid, and I'm not going to allow you to humiliate me by giving me verbal attributes and saying all this nice stuff and compliments while then you go with a hatchet and sabotage everything I'm trying to do and knock down all the trees to prevent anything from happening. You do that, you are on your own. And say this publicly and say it like that. Say, we are no longer going to underwrite known failure. It's irrational, illogical, and immoral. We're not going to do it any further. That is the definition of America first. Why should we send our, forget about who's paying for the bombs and bullets and missiles and all that. We don't have enough of them, and we can't make them fast enough to just give them what they need to continue fighting this pointless war, because they need more than we have to manufacture. So the only thing you can do is to continue to draw your stocks down, which means our national security will be weakened. NATO's already is. All of NATO to put together, to include ours, is much less capable now because of the thousands, the tens of thousands of military vehicles of all different sorts, the millions upon millions of rounds, hundreds of millions of various kinds of bullets, tens of millions of artillery shells, you name it, interceptor missiles, long-range missiles, all kinds of things, multiple launch rockets, I mean, aircraft. I mean, you name it. All this stuff has come out of our stocks. None of it wasn't just like just sitting around with nothing to do, just empty and just no reason, you know, like the stocks are at your local Walmart or something. This stuff came out of our war stocks. And then the reason we had it is because we know that if we ever get into a sustained combat, we have to have replacements that you can just pull off the shelf or that you can take out of storage, refurbish it real quick and get it into the fight. Now then, those are gone. So that means now if we get into an unexpected war that turns into a war of attrition, we don't have it. So our national security is already compromised because of what's happened up to this point. And every day this war goes on, that compromise deepens. So if President Trump is going to be an America First president, he's got to put an end to this problem of sabotaging our own national security, to the weakening of our own capacity. He's got to put a stop to it. And he's got to finally just say, I'm running the show here, you're not, to Europe and to Ukraine. Or we're going to know that he is not running the show, that for all of his bluster, he is not an America First president. No matter what he wants to claim about himself, he is not the leader, the indispensable country and all that. If he does what he has done in February of this year, in August of this year, and if he does it again in this point, after these in-your-face declarations of sabotage by Ursula von der Leyen and Mark Rutte, then we're going to have our answer. We're going to be watching to see what's going to happen with that. But you need to understand, that's what's at stake here. Who's running the show, and is President Trump an America First president? All those things are on the line right now because he has been called out right now, and everything depends on what happens next. As a last point of comment, the war is known. It won't have any effect on the outcome of the war because that's already guaranteed. That's already baked in. Russia won. Ukraine lost. Everything NATO did failed. Period. The only question now is how deep that failure is going to be once all is said and done. That's the only thing that's still outstanding. And now it's also outstanding to find out, where is President Trump going to come? How does he want to be remembered in history? They will look back to this day. They're already going to look back to the ones I just mentioned here, but they're definitely going to look to this one. What happens next? That's the real question, and we all are waiting to find out that answer. I think we have a pretty good idea where it's going to end up. I hope I'm wrong, but we'll keep a track on this and definitely let you know what happens with it in the meantime. Well, I hope that you all have, especially for our American audience, tomorrow is Thanksgiving. I'm very thankful for you guys, and I just want to say that right off the bat here, that without you, there wouldn't be a channel. Without you, I'd just be ranting here in my basement. And you know, no one would even know anything. So I'm really grateful that I have somewhere to vent this stuff. And a lot of like-minded people who also care about people, who care about peace and want to see this expanded. We're very, very grateful. Gary and I both are. So may you have a really good Thanksgiving day. We'll look forward to seeing you on the next episode of the Daniel Davis Deep Dive.